Though we all want good food, nobody wants good food more than the mothers of America. And so we ask, how can mothers and the rest of us find real good food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1223rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Civitavecchia who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, consider Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food. Allow me to explain. If we buy food from our neighbor, the farmer, we can look into his or her eyes and pretty much see what's in the food. And that gives us a lot of control. But if we are buying food made in China, we have to rely on the word of all those who move the food along that very long food chain from there to here. Many of those who do the moving don't even speak our language, nor do they have any idea of knowing who we are or even where we are. There are those who watch over that food and make certain that the food we want is what we're going to be buying. There is food that has been certified organic, humanely produced, naturally grown, non-GMO, plant-based, shade-grown, halal, or kosher, and even vegetarian-fed, though we're not certain exactly what that might be. All these certifications assure us that the distance between us and the source of our food will not make a difference, and that what we want most in our food, whether that is production was friendly to birds or sustainable or whatever, will be in fact what we are buying. But what if our desire is as elemental as that of a mother who simply wants good food to feed her baby? That thought leads us to ask, who will certify that food is safe for moms? Here to help us find the answer, we have Zen Honeycutt, who is the founder and executive director of Moms Across America, the author of Unstoppable, Transforming Sickness and Struggle into Triumph, Empowerment, and a Celebration of Community. Zen, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Show.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you to all of your listeners. It's lovely to be with you.
Well, so happy to have you aboard. Do you remember that moment or moments when the apple fell from the tree for you and you decided to become an activist, a community organizer, an author, a documentarian, a speaker, and the founder and executive director of Moms Across America?
Oh, well, those apples didn't fall all at once. It was one at a time, and I actually never intended on being an activist. I did dream of being an author for a long time, but I didn't know what the subject would be about. But it started for me when my children got sick and when I didn't know what to do about it. And it actually took quite a few years in order to actually start doing something about it. In the beginning, I don't want to say I didn't do anything about it. What we did was we avoided nuts. You know, my son almost died on Thanksgiving evening from a pecan in the stuffing. So for many years, we were very vigilant. I did an awful lot.
A pecan in the stuffing? Was he allergic or something?
Yes, he was allergic to nuts. And we realized that in a major way. We knew he had some type of allergies, but we realized in a major way at that moment. And he almost died. He went to ER, and it was terrifying. And so we were very vigilant about avoiding nuts, and, you know, play dates and birthdays became like very scary situations. We had to be extremely careful. That's what we knew to do at that time for a very long time. But then a couple years later, my son, his mouth was swollen up. He had rashes from all kinds of other foods. He had many different food allergies. And he said, you know, Mom, I really wish all my allergies would go away. And I said, me too, buddy. But what I realized I was saying in my head silently was that's never going to happen, because that's what the doctors had told me. They told me that his allergies would only get worse, especially nut allergies can become increasingly more life-threatening. And so I realized what I was saying in my head, and that was pretty resigned and doubtful. And I thought, you know what? what if there was something we could do about this? And I remembered my cousin Sarah, who had gone gluten-free for a year, and then she was able to eat some gluten, you know, a piece of cake at a wedding or a piece of pizza at a birthday party, and she wouldn't have the same reactions that she previously had, which, you know, might have been diarrhea or rashes or fatigue or, you know, brain fog. She didn't have those reactions anymore. So I reminded my son of that, and I said, Ben, would you like to be able to do that? Would you like to be able to have a slice of pizza at a birthday party like a year from now? And he thought about it. He said, yes. And I said, well, then would you be my partner in your health? You know, would you drink green drinks and do whatever it takes, go to alternative doctors, whatever it is? And he thought about it. He was about 8 and a half. He could make his own decisions. He said, yes.
How old was he?
I think he was about 8 and a half or 9.
Okay.
Sure, somewhere around there. Yeah, and he said, yes. And I said, then I promise you, buddy, you will get better. And I shook his hand. And it was like a white light moment for me, like scary. Like my skin was tingling and I was nervous because I didn't know how. But I knew that if I made a promise to him, I would take actions that I normally never would have taken, right? When your word is on line there with your kids, you're going to do whatever it takes.
You made a deal.
And when he took on partnership, his active participation would have him get better. I just knew it. And so from that moment on, we began to research. I wasn't an activist yet, but we began to research. I learned about GMOs in the food supply. We went completely GMO-free. And 4 months later, his allergies were dramatically better. That red line around his mouth that puffed up and swelled for 2 weeks went down to a couple of days. And it was very light and pink. And it was not, you know, embarrassing and painful. His ability to digest food and his immune system was improving. And within about a year or two of going organic, he was tested again, and his allergies went from a 19 down to a 0.2. So he no longer has life-threatening allergies to nuts. He does react sometimes, especially if he eats a lot of them, but he doesn't have to go to the hospital. It is a much better situation, and he chooses to eat foods that are healthy for him now. And I have peace of mind because I know that his choices are protecting him rather than endangering him.
So when you presented this to the doctors, what did they say?
Well, they were very happy for us, and particularly one doctor, which was an autism doctor, when we shared that, you know, when my son went organic, he was better. He thought, you know, I've been telling children with autism to eat dairy-free and gluten-free, but not organic. So I'm going to try that. And that was particularly important when my second son got autism symptoms. And this was when we were well into starting Moms Across America and raising awareness about GMOs and glyphosate. We learned about glyphosate, that it's glyphosate is in Roundup. And that's what 80% of GMOs are engineered to withstand, is Roundup. And so Roundup is sprayed on wheat as a drying agent in many northern wetter areas. And so our children that are eating wheat are eating glyphosate. And it's sprayed on many other things, beans and peas and sugar and soy and corn and all that. And so our children are eating glyphosate, and glyphosate destroys the beneficial gut bacteria and allows for the proliferation of pathogenic gut bacteria. And it weakens the immune system. So our children that have autism symptoms almost across the board have weakened immune systems, and they have an imbalance of the gut bacteria. So they have more pathogenic than they do beneficial. So there's a connection between glyphosate and autism for that reason alone. It can lead to the imbalance of the gut microbiota. And so when I told my doctor this, when my son had autism symptoms, I said, you know what, I think we should go completely not just gluten-free, but organic. Because it's not just the gluten that's in the wheat that's bothering our children. It's the glyphosate on the wheat that's destroying our children's gut bacteria. And so we did that, and my son, within 6 weeks of having autism symptoms, and by the way, at that time, we tested my son's, and that middle son, the one with the autism symptoms, was the only one to have glyphosate in his urine. He had 8 times higher the amount of anyone that was ever found to be tested in Europe.
Now, this is compared to your other sons as well?
Well, yeah, my other sons didn't have glyphosate in their urine, and they were not eating wheat. They were gluten intolerant, quote unquote. So my middle son was eating wheat because he hadn't tested positive for that gluten intolerance, you know, a year or two before. And so we cut that out, but not only cut out gluten, we cut out all food that wasn't organic because, again, if food is not organic, it could be sprayed with glyphosate as a drying agent, like peas and beans and legumes. And, you know, the animals that are eating those grains are going to have glyphosate in them if they're not, you know, organically fed. So we cut out all food that was not organic. And within 6 weeks, we retested him. And his glyphosate levels were no longer detectable. And his autism symptoms were gone and have never come back.
Zen Honeycutt, the mom, becomes Zen Honeycutt, the jihadist.
An activist, a serious, you know, a serious vigilante for safe food, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And along the way, I didn't really answer your question about how I got started as an activist, but those moments were pivotal for me in saying, wait a second, if my children can get better, then other people's children can get better too. And everybody should know about this. GMOs should be not only labeled, but they should not be in our food. whether they are labeled or not, they should not be in our food. And pesticides like glyphosate should not be in our food. And people should know about them, and they should be able to choose to purchase organic, or if they can't purchase organic, for gosh sakes, everybody should be able to have access to healthy food, regardless of whether they can afford, you know, 30% more on food prices.
Yes, but nobody should be more entitled to good, clean food than moms.
Yeah. And anybody. Yeah,
but moms are in a unique position because, as I understand it, they purchase about 85% of the food,
yes,
right?
We do. So we therefore have the largest responsibility of bringing healthy food to our families and of the potential, the largest potential to transform the food supply. And that's why I focused on moms, and I had the idea in November of 2012, after we lost the Prop 37 GMO labeling initiative, to start a campaign to join into 4th of July parades. And I called it Moms Across America March to Label GMOs. And we would join into 4th of July parades and raise awareness with thousands locally in one parade. There could be 5 to 30,000 people. And millions nationally in a single day, if people did this all across the country on the same day. And it was very exciting, and people loved the idea, and people joined in, and it became an event, 179 groups across the country, raising awareness with millions of people. And since then, over 600 leaders have posted on our website over 1,000 events. And
wow.
I'm in all 50 states.
If you're going to organize a holy war against bad food, moms would be the place to start because they purchase 85% of all the food for the families.
Yeah.
And so they have, you know, on the one hand, they're very vulnerable. On the other hand, they have the opportunity to change the way we eat in very dramatic fashion. And so that's where we're going today, folks. How can moms find safe food? Well, they can take it on their own hands and make it safe that way. We're talking with Zen Honeycutt, who is the founder and executive of Moms Across America, and a campaign to identify and label moms safe food. What an incredible idea. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What? Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking mom-safe food. Who could possibly want safe food more than a mother? I can't think of anybody. Us guys, you know, we love food too, but we're not so discriminating, and because we just don't think of anything but our bellies, and they're empty, and we need to fill them, and that's that. So we'll pretty much throw anything we can in there. But maybe we should pause and give it consideration. Maybe we should look to what moms across America are doing and give a thought to our condition as well. Men seem to grow the food. Women seem to buy the food. Is that a fair way of putting it, Zen?
Well, in some places, and in places like India, they would argue that women are major growers of food in Africa as well.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Women are the ones.
By far and away,
women are the ones who do the small farms that provide much of the food for the world. But when it comes to those big tractors and that the acres and acres and acres of wheat or soybeans or what have you, it tends to be guys up there on the tractor.
Yes, Vandana Shiva says that men farm for profit and women farm to nourish.
That's mean. And precise.
Well, that's the perspective, of industrial farming, which is mostly run by men, tends to be GMO, monocrop culture, agriculture, and they're concerned with, getting the best price for their commodity. Whereas in most cases, when women farm, they're farming to feed their families, and they are concerned about a biodiverse, a diverse diet and having peas and beans and legumes and grains and vegetables and fruit and a whole wide variety of foods. So they tend to farm small farms with a greater diversity than men who are farming big monocrop culture farms for a profit to provide for their families. And it's a noble thing to provide for their families, right? It's a different perspective. Providing. Yeah.
If one were selling Brussels sprouts, one probably shouldn't try to advertise them to young men, because you probably waste a lot of money there. But if you wanted to sell them, best place to sell them would probably be mothers who are concerned that their children would get all of the nutrients, the minerals and vitamins that are in those little mini cabbages. And so that's who you would target there for sure. Now, I notice you're really focusing on GMOs and the lessons learned by virtue of your son's allergies and autism symptoms. People don't tend to think that autism or these conditions could be result from an herbicide that is used everywhere. And we do use it everywhere. Like you said, we use it for killing weeds, but we also use it as a desiccant, which is to say just to dry out crops so that we can harvest them earlier. And so that glyphosate has found its way into everything. I interviewed some doctors from UCSF who did a random blood test from people sending blood into the UCSF for evaluation. They found 97% of the samples had glyphosate in them. Now, Zen Honeycutt, the people who make glyphosate, the former Monsanto and now Bayer, say it's safe. How do you respond to them?
Well, my response is that they are misleading and deceiving the American public and the public around the world, that they know it's not safe. And we have scientific studies to show that. And we have the emails and the documents from the discovery process of the lawsuits against Monsanto showing that they knew that it was not safe since 1985 or even earlier. And so they're simply putting out propaganda in order to increase their profits. And, just to give you an example, they knew it was not safe. Let's just take from the perspective of the school pesticide applicator, because that was the first lawsuit that was put out. They knew that the studies were showing that the dermal exposure, absorption into the skin, was very unsafe. So what they did was they literally cooked the studies. They took human skin and they cooked it, and then they froze it, and then they cooked it again. And then they exposed that dry skin that was like a leather to the to their product, to Roundup, Ranger Pro, the glyphosate-based herbicide that was being tested. And of course, it didn't go through and damage the skin the way it would have had it been a normal human, skin from a cadaver. And so they literally cooked the science to put out a study showing that it didn't harm the skin the way had previously been shown, and to allude that somehow their formula was changed or was improved and was now safer. And so this type of fraudulent science is what you can basically count on from big corporations that are beholden to their shareholders to make a profit. They will do whatever it takes to deceive the public. And so I say shame on them. And I say it's time to expose the independent science that shows that their products are harmful and that their products should be nowhere near our dinner tables.
You know, whenever I hear stories like the one you just told, a phrase comes to my mind, and it is, the best science money can buy.
Absolutely. You nailed it on the head. That's what it is. That's what they're doing. And that is what scientists and professors in schools have been exposed to doing. They're being paid to produce the science, or they are being paid to ghostwrite. You know, Monsanto ghostwrites the science, and then the professor from a particular university simply signs that study. And collects a check.
And collects a check.
The school gets a donation. That professor's tenured. They will do whatever they can to protect their reputation. It is really very disconcerting, and it's an important one when parents are considering sending their kids to a certain college. I would find out who are the funders of that university and what type of education are their children really going to be getting if Monsanto or Dow DuPont, you know, now Bayer, not Monsanto, Bayer or Dow or DuPont or Syngenta are funding that school.
Now, you talked about tracking down your son's problems to their, essentially to their gut,
yes,
and what was going on in their gut. Now, we know that so much of the power of our ability to reject bad things comes from the immune system of the gut. What led you to focus in on the gut with respect? I mean, this, looking back, you were probably one of the very few people who were actually thinking about it, the gut, at that time.
Yeah, at that time, that's very true. I actually had the help of, at that time, of a very wise doctor. He was a doctor who had a child with autism, and we went to him because we liked his spaced out vaccine schedule. He was okay with us not giving our kids five vaccines at once and spacing them out. So we went to him. My children at the time did not have autism, but, you know, we went to him, and when my son exhibited with autism symptoms, he said, I'm going to test his urine for bacteria, and essentially his gut, you know, for bacteria and fungus. And I said, why? And he said, well, because bacteria and fungus can lead to inflammation in the brain. The body reacts and causes inflammation in the brain, and that can lead to autism symptoms, you know, behavioral issues, erratic behavior, all of that. And I thought, wait a second. That's what glyphosate does. Glyphosate destroys the beneficial gut bacteria and allows for the proliferation of pathogenic gut bacteria, as I said earlier. And when the pathogenic bacteria proliferates, it has in the outer walls of it something called lipopolysaccharides. And the job for those are to tell the vagus nerve to go on attack. So just imagine the brain is saying, you know, the vagus nerve is signaling the brain to go and attack. It's saying, bad guys in the gut, go and attack, right? It's like marching orders. And when the brain, the microglia cells in the brain get that message, they go and attack by creating glutamate, which creates inflammation in the brain. It gets somebody excited, right? It gets them aggravated and agitated. And that can lead to brain synapses, you know, brain neurons dying and their synapses failing, lack of eye contact, lack of behavioral controls, you know, impulse controls, you know, memory loss, you know, things like my son, he just said all of a sudden, he was an A student in math, all of a sudden he was getting D's and F's. And he said, it's just too hard. He wouldn't even try. He's putting his head down and not even trying during a test. And so his brain neurons were not connecting. And so when I shared this with the doctor and talked about glyphosate and the gut, he said, yeah, the gut is what tells the brain, you know, and impacts the brain, not just tells the brain what to do, but it impacts the brain. And in fact, other nutritionists and dietitians, you know, informed me that when a child is craving pizza and cheese and sugar, it's because their gut bacteria, the pathogenic gut bacteria, want it because it feeds them. They grow off cheese and wheat and, you know, the sugar. And so when we eliminated all of that from my son's diet, we found that his autism symptoms went away. So it all comes from the gut. And in addition, the immune system gets better. He's able to actually pet a cat now. Before, he had very bad allergies to cats. and other, you know, types of, he had asthma, he had autoimmune reactions, you know, many more rashes and things. So we can improve our children's health through paying attention to what goes into their stomachs and their bodies, you know, toxins in their bodies as well. And when we moms are at the forefront of doing that.
And it's a holy war worth raging, don't you think?
It's a very important battle, and or food fight, as some call it.
And, food fight, sure.
And we need to take those matters into our own hands. And
So how did you take them into your own hands? Zen Honeycutt mother straps on the weapons of war and heads out the front door, and she's going to do battle with some of the biggest agrochemical companies in the world. And in fact, with so many of America's farmers who have come to rely on glyphosate and herbicides and pesticides. And you're trying to protect your kids, trying to salvage your kids.
Yes.
What do you do?
Well, we did that by, as I mentioned before, joining into 4th of July parades and passing out flyers to raise awareness with the consumers, because the consumers have the power to shift the marketplace. If we don't buy it, they can't sell it.
85% right? of the food is purchased by moms. Okay.
So first of all was to raise awareness. Second of all, we didn't raise awareness just with the consumers. I went to the Monsanto shareholder meeting and spoke in front of 1,200 of the shareholders and board of directors more than once, and raised awareness with them.
And now, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that experience.
Okay. Give me time to talk about our gold standard, too.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm reserving a whole segment for that. But I had an experience once where I had the opportunity to speak in front of the International Biotech Convention in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And when asked for my summation, I just said, you know, you folks have developed a miraculous technology. You've made life very easy for farmers and food producers, and you've made them happy, and you've made yourself rich. But someday along the line, somebody's going to come to you and say, wait a minute, what's in this for us? But food that has been drenched in herbicide and infused with pesticide. And lo and behold, that was Zen Honeycutt that showed up at the front door. And so you are talking to them, and would you describe that process, what that experience that you had in speaking to that audience?
Yeah, first of all, it was a dream come true. I had been imagining going face to face with Hugh Grant, who is that's the unfortunate name of the former CEO of Monsanto, imposing Scottish man. And I was asked to do so by the Organic Consumers Association and a group of people who knew an investor who had invested enough money in Monsanto in order to be able to present proxies, you know, changes, to mm-hmm. try to make changes within the company. And so I was asked to go and speak on his behalf. And in doing so, I would also be there for the question and answer period, in which I could get up and ask questions. And so it was terrifying, but it was also exactly what I wanted. And it was wonderful to be able to go there. And I had prepared 3 minutes, which I had run by, you know, many different people, to present a proxy, asking them to allow a pediatrician or a farmer on the board, right? If they're going to be professing to feed the world or proclaiming to feed the world, they should have a pediatrician and a farmer on the board. So I did my 3-minute request of that. And I also got to ask questions and answers, in which I basically confronted every single issue that every mom would ever want to ask Monsanto and basically demand of Monsanto, but in a very nice way. I wasn't aggressive. And I got to also speak with the head of Monsanto, and I asked him, I said to him, you know, Mr. Grant, moms across America is looking forward to the day when Monsanto no longer produces products which harm our children. And he said, oh, we're always looking forward, and we have science on our side. And I said, well, we have science, too, that your products harm our children. And I said, and you've got to consider, you know, what if you're wrong? You're affecting people nationwide. He said, well, actually, globally. I'm like, well, you're right, globally. The consequences, if you're wrong, to people globally are devastating. And he said, well, if you're wrong, you're worrying an awful lot of people. And I said, yeah, but if I'm wrong, the consequence to them is only that they're buying organic. And there's nothing wrong with organic. And I said, you know, it takes a big man to make a big and powerful company, but it takes an even bigger man to acknowledge when something's not working and go in a new direction. And I got him for one iota of a second. I think he heard me. And I think that part of the reason why, not the entire reason why, but part of the reason why he sold the company to Bayer is because he knew that taking that company in a new direction wasn't going to work under the name Monsanto. That they had too much invested in Roundup. It was their flagship product. It was the majority of their sales. And it wasn't going to work just to, you know, give that up. And their attempts to do that right after that, they invested, I don't know, $5 billion more in dicamba and all these old chemicals, and they caused even more problems. As soon as they put that out, there were more lawsuits. So,
and we're going to take a quick break, Zen, but yeah. When we come back, we're going to go to what Moms Against America are doing today.
Moms Across America.
Moms Across America. I got my tongue twisted up a little bit there. But Moms Across America are going to do to watch over the food they feed their children. Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, Zen Honeycutt, I just got to thinking about what you must have felt when you saw that look across Hugh Grant's eyes when you knew you got through to him.
Yeah, it was an important moment, and I knew that moment was important not just for me or for him, but for all the mothers who are trying to protect their children. You know, desperately struggling. And I knew I was there as a representative for them. And I was very honored and glad to be able to have that moment and to ask all the shareholders. I said, what if the investment that you're making to ensure your grandchildren's future is the very same investment that is destroying their future? And I went on to describe the reproductive effects, you know, how the third generations of hamsters that ate GMOs in a Russian study, the third generation were sterile. You know, that's not the future that we want for our children. And so it is imperative that we know that GMOs are in our food, that we get GMOs out of our food. And unfortunately, right now, our current administration has wiped out everybody at the USDA that was formerly regulating GMOs. We have no regulation now of GMOs. We have no GMO labeling.
Well, that happened in the last administration, I think, in which they passed a rule about labeling GMOs that, in effect, said you could label GMOs by making smoke signals on a windy day, which is to say...
Well, they didn't have to be labeled. They could have a phone number or an email or address, right? Yeah. They didn't properly label GMOs. But what I'm pointing at now is that they've actually eliminated the positions, the people, that they've eliminated the funding and from this current administration of people that were attempting to regulate GMOs. So they're no longer processing and regulating GMOs. There's no one's left. This is from an article from a member of the USDA that where they made cuts and people left and moved. He said there's no one left at the USDA that's regulating GMOs. Yeah. And the glyphosate that was supposed to be regulated is not being, you know, it's not being, they're allowing glyphosate to be used continually, even though we know it causes cancer.
This would seem to be a good opportunity for Moms Across America to arm themselves with a certification system that transcends what the USDA offers. I'm of the opinion, Zen, that whenever you give government the authority to do something, it becomes, the more power you give the government, the more valuable it becomes to those who have the economies of scale sufficient to buy the government. And that's where Monsanto is really clever. It could buy the government and all of the universities and everything. And Moms Across America are out here going, wait a minute, what are you doing to our children? And so you have it as the Moms Across America, it would seem to me, have the opportunity to put a stamp on the food that says this food is safe, because who believes the government anymore? You know, people don't believe the government anymore, but they might believe Moms Across America, because nobody wants good, clean food than mothers. Is that a fair statement? Is that
Well, I would say that we are the most vigilant about it because we're at the forefront of taking care of our children. For the most part, most of mothers are the ones to see the first sniffle, to hear the first cough, to take them to the doctor, to see the behavioral changes, because most mothers are home more or responsible for more of those things than fathers. But, I've got to say my husband is incredibly vigilant about this as well. So I want to say hats off to them. But we did see a failure in the regulation that is put upon the government in order to regulate big corporations from using their, allowing their greed to supersede their responsibility to provide safe products, right? That, in my opinion, the role of the government must provide some regulation in order to be a check and balance for these large private corporations that will do whatever they can and try to get away with whatever they can in order to make money. Yeah, so there is a role of the government, and they've been failing to fill that role.
If you look at what happened to organic, the organic certification, and how big corporations moved to the government and said, we want to go organically too, but you have to change the rules because these rules are too strong for us. So the rules now for organic farming now include you can grow organic food and water. And that's what you see going on and on and on and on. It would seem like if somebody can come up with a certification program that's immune somehow to the influence of that money, you could do pretty good. And I think that's what you're up to, is it not?
Yeah, well, we took matters into our own hands and we created the Moms Across America Gold Standard. And this is a three-tiered verification system. It's like a meta certification. So the companies that have gone to the extent to get some very important certifications, we want to acknowledge them. We also want to add in additional testing, which has not been done, or additional requirements that are not required by the USDA organic, certification, or the non-GMO project verified system, or some of the other certifications. These are great, verifications or certifications, but we want to do more than that. So in our first tier, number one, you cannot have any artificial synthetic dyes or artificial flavors. Things like carrageenan are also not allowed, like red food color, the dyes, which can be cause kids to be very reactive behaviorally. Also, it must be organic. That is a foundational basis for us. It must be either USDA organic or CCOF, or there's a whole list.
Certified organic, right?
Yes.
Quick thought, though. Do you think organic food should be certified organic or tested organic?
I think it should be certified because we moms across America don't have certifiers to go out and check the soil and do the testing and check the grounds. We're not that type of outfit.
Okay.
So we need to rely on other certifiers, and there's many of them. It's not just USDA Organic, but CCOF or Oregon Tills or other certifiers. We need to rely on those certification systems, which are very extensive and very detailed, in order to have a foundation for what we want. And then in addition to that, we want glyphosate residue free, which is either the detox project, glyphosate residue free, which is what we prefer. But some companies have already tested for glyphosate. They've been doing that. They've been batch testing. So we will accept testing from companies that are already conducting glyphosate testing. And it must be glyphosate tested in order to reach the first tier. And that's three stars.
So that's tier one.
Yes, and in tier two.
Wow, you're testing for glyphosate. Why couldn't you just go ahead and test for other pesticides too in the process?
I'm getting to that. In tier two and four stars, if the product could be GMO, then it must be non-GMO project verified. And then there's also additional testing. There's heavy metal testing and pesticide testing, and these are. They call them panels, right, for many different pesticides. So it's additional pesticides in addition to glyphosate. And then also, if there are animal products in it to get the four stars, that the animal products need to be raised on a farm which is certified humane or animal welfare approved, one of those types of animal welfare certifications. And then in the five stars, the product needs to be created from a company that's fair trade certified or has an affidavit regarding fair local labor. They also need to have low to no pollution packaging. You know, that means either biodegradable, or they need to have a mail-in recycling program, or use glass or steel packages, or made with at least 50% or more recycled material, made with it, not just, oh, our product is, our packaging is recyclable. No, it needs to be made from recycled material. And also, they need to support regenerative organic agriculture or biodynamic, and, either be certified or support that type of farming by using foods from a regenerative organic farm or by biodynamic farm, or donating to an organization, and we list eight of them, which are actually supporting farmers to transition from conventional or even organic to regenerative organic farming or biodynamic farming. And this is important because it's those types of farming sequester carbon and can reduce climate change and the impact on the earth. So we want to celebrate the food manufacturers who are making food that's not only good for our families, but good for the planet. And it really is an exceptional standard.
Wow. Now, I would assume that forcing farmers to jump through all of these hoops is going to increase the cost of their doing business and by quite a bit, which means that the food that's going to be offered that is certified by Moms Across America is going to be more expensive than the food they can buy that is not. Now, I happen to believe Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't. So I'm not so afraid of paying a little more for food that I know has been grown with how I want it to have been grown. But in convincing your moms, how do you go about teaching them that cheap food isn't?
Well, when you talk about the long-term expenses rather than the short-term, purchase, moms get it. I mean, for instance, we used to spend $10,000 or $15,000 a year just on the co-pays with good health insurance for my children's autoimmune issues, going to the doctors for sickness and colds and, allergic reactions. And we don't spend that anymore. We don't have that cost. Our kids hardly ever get sick. One has an issue which may be genetic. We're trying to sort that out. So we have a few doctor bills recently. But in general, they don't get sick the way other kids do. If there's a cold or a flu going around, they may get it for one day, maybe two. And other kids, their friends are out of school for a week or two. So we tell the mom, we share with the mom that, you either pay the farmer or you pay the doctor. And we prefer to pay the farmer. And we prefer food which is of high quality. It's more nutrient dense. And we prefer food that's not going to impact the planet in the future. I mean, for gosh sakes, asking for food manufacturers to use less plastic or to use at least biodegradable plastic, this is not just a reasonable ask. This is a dire situation. The planet is choking on plastic. And if it's going to cost the food manufacturer, not the farmer, this is the food manufacturer, to source a plastic which is biodegradable or use a recyclable mail-in program or something like that, then that's what needs to be done. These are simply things that must be done in order to protect the future of our planet. And we set a high bar because our children's future is at stake.
They must be done. Can they be done?
Absolutely. Yes, there are companies that are doing this, and there are companies that are striving to do this. They've seen our standards, and they say, you know what, in a year or two, we're going to get back to you. And we're like, absolutely, here's some sources. We found some packaging companies and some, we went to Supply Side West and found many suppliers, raw material suppliers, which are supplying not only organic ingredients, but glyphosate tested as well. They know that even organic is showing up with some glyphosate contamination. So they're batch testing. And if you were to go to these supply expos and see these raw materials, how many of them are organic now, you would be blown away. It is happening. Whether food manufacturers want to or not, they are all moving in. And supplements, by the way. Supplements, no, they're like, this is what the consumers want. They want safe food. So that's the direction that they're going in.
Okay. So it must be done. It can be done. Mm-hmm. Will it be done?
Yes, we believe it will. It will take time. It's not going to be like we're not going to have hundreds of companies verified with us in the next month or two. We're talking to a few dozen companies right now. We've already had four verify with us. We've had Chaz Organic originally verify get five gold stars for their coconut whipping cream product. If you want a vegan, non-dairy, non-soy product to make whipping cream for your kids, this is the product to get. It's wonderful. We've also had BioRay, which was the first one. They have 5 stars for their detox product, primary detox, and Omni Blue, which has a mineral product. It's essential that we have minerals to fight off chronic disease and cancer, and they have a liquid mineral product. And then Regular Girl has a pre and probiotic product, which achieved 4 gold stars. So these are companies that are going the extra mile in order to provide food and supplements that are not only safe, but are, good for our environment and our planet. And we're very, very proud to work with them and to share the stories about some of the things that they're doing. For instance, the primary detox product, the owner, Stephanie of BioRay, found out that the label around the glass bottle of the tincture was making the bottle itself not recyclable, the packaging. So she had that label changed out to a plant-based label, and now the bottle can be fully recycled.
There you
and
go.
That's the type of integrity that we're excited to share.
Zen Honeycutt, moms across America, you saw the health of your children, your 3 boys, failing. What is the first thing you looked for?
Well, I looked for why and what can I do about it.
And you found it where?
I found it in the food supply. I found that GMOs and the pesticides, glyphosate that came with it, were deteriorating my children's health. I also believe that the high numbers of vaccines and the ingredients in vaccines, one of which is glyphosate, weed killer, has been found in vaccines, also attributed to my children's health.
There it is.
Believe,
we ran out of time, Zen, but we're not out of spirit. We're going to do this. 85% of the food is purchased by moms, and moms are on the march for good food. Zen Honeycutt, thank you so much for joining us on Food Chain Radio. And thank you all for tuning in as well.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.